Good morning from San Francisco, California. My name is Brian Madden, and you're listening to Brian and Gabe Live. Thank you, everyone, for joining. And joining on our end, as always, Gabe Knuth from Omaha, Nebraska. How are you, Gabe?
Not bad. How are you? I can't believe it's December, and we're doing our, 14th show?
Oh, December 14th. That's my birthday. You can all buy me presents. Yeah. I mean, you all, the coworkers.
All seven people send Brian $1, so he has $7.
Jack Madden is in the studio with us today, as always. Jack, thank you.
Good morning, Brian and Gabe.
And also joining us as our guest this week is from Citrix's online group, Brian D. Huff.
Hey, great to be here with you this morning.
Way to spell your name the correct way, Brian. Thank you.
You got the lowercase d and the big H right?
I think I did, right? Did
two,
I?
Two A's, two F's?
Two A's, two F's. Is that Dutch, I guess, back
it
in the day?
It is Dutch, yeah. So
the topic today, actually, this is a conversation that we had, Brian, you and I guess, yesterday. We were talking about the consumerization of IT, and you kind of said, no, I think we should talk about, you know, people talk about the consumerization of IT a lot, but no one really talks about consumerization for IT. And so what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, when you think about what's happening, you know, the people who are the most technical actually have the most access to mobile devices, applications, so on and so forth, but yet have a bad rap, as Nicholas Carr declared about 10 years ago, now that IT is dead. I mean, IT is hardly dead, right? There's more software than ever. There are more devices than ever, and there's more support needed than ever. And if you look at technology and companies today, technology is critical both for internal innovation, but it's also critical to support that technology externally. So IT is at the forefront of what we're seeing happen and gets to take advantage of all these new technologies to be able to provide support to people and be able to support those devices that are in the field. So I'd say, you know, let's turn now and start talking about what consumerization does for IT rather than what its threat is to IT moving forward.
I kind of think you nailed it with that last sentence, because it seems like when you think of the field of IT and consumerization, it's definitely a threat. I mean, to me, it's you know, you have assholes like me who are talking about FUIT and how easy it is for users to screw the IT department. So that's what I mean.
And then telling them how to do it.
But that's the worst. That's our nightmare, you know. So I think to a lot of IT professionals, consumerization is that threat, and it is the, you know, this is making my job difficult, and like all I need is the ability for my users to have another way to screw me.
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, let's take the FUIT and let's flip it around and say, hey, you know what? This is for you, IT.
Oh, man.
Yeah, let's go with that for a minute, huh? Oh. I mean, why does it always have to be that IT hasn't delivered the devices or the applications when, in fact, you know, if I look at the IT support that I get internally at Citrix, it's just awesome. I've got a system to submit when I need stuff done. They get back to me. There's a survey. I've accessed all the applications I need. These guys, no matter when I need support, they've got the mobile devices to be able to support it. You know, we ourselves launched a remote support tool that you can use off of the iPad, go to manage for iPad. So there are all types of ways that IT is stepping up now and delivering great technology support to internal users. And I'd say their IT, the cohorts and the support organizations are delivering it to external customers who are using that technology.
Can we get that? We don't have any of that here at our company, but it's interesting because so when you talk about consumerization for IT, I mean, you're talking about, I guess, IT professionals using the same consumerization tools that the end users are using, but in order to use that to help them do their jobs. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, and I would suggest that they already are. Right. I don't know why IT has become a whipping ground or an area to take so much abuse when, in fact, IT often is at the forefront of technology adoption.
Right. But we don't want people to know that, because if they knew that we all had Dropbox, then they would want Dropbox. And I can't control that when they have Dropbox.
Exactly. Well, clearly there are challenges, but that goes back to my point, which is IT is needed more now than ever. Right.
Yeah.
Now than ever, now that we live in this hybrid world of cloud-based applications that run locally. And I say this is going to get worse, right? We've got the Generation Y group coming forward, so Generation Y, also known as the Millenniums, folks born between 1977 and 1997, by 2015 will be 50% of the workforce, right? This we're going to see some radical change. This is a group who grew up with devices, grew up with applications. You know, computers were omnipresent in their lives.
And so I feel like the conversation is, there's a couple different angles here. So on the one hand, it's we can look at what IT professionals can, how they can leverage those consumer, sort of like consumer-ish type, you know, as a service tools. But then on the other hand, how, so that's on the one hand, but then on the other hand is how there's all these tools existing really just sort of guarantees like great job security for IT people everywhere. Because now I almost wonder if there's like an overabundance of choices for the end users and everything. And, you know, here even at TechTarget, we're talking about, do we use Dropbox versus do we use Box? And, you know, which one's better? And now our IT people are involved in that conversation and we're all using it. And it's kind of funny because in the old days, we didn't have those kinds of conversations because it was like, here's your file share, here's a VPN, the end. And now we've got all these choices to sort of wade through. And so I feel like we're spending more time. Like all Dropbox has done for us is made us have more time to with more stuff to talk about to figure out before we can actually make a decision.
Yeah, but don't you think that's always defined technology, right? As choices have come along, there are both opportunities and threats, right? So we've been focused the last few years talking about the threats to IT, but I'd say, hey, for everyone in technology, including IT, there the world is abound in opportunities now to define what policies look like, what security looks like, to support more applications, more devices, distributed workforces. There's a chance for IT to be more strategic than it has been, and to me, it's an exciting time to live in.
But I guess in order to actually do that, we just have to break up everything that IT does into little bits and kind of take it one step at a time. Because a lot of this sort of stuff, I don't know how much this exists yet. Because we've got different application platforms, we've got different, you know, ways of securing applications, different ways of applying policy to applications, different ways of doing everything. And in order for IT to sort of wrap their hands around everything, I guess we have to figure out, like, here's how we deal with desktops, and here's how we deal with iPads, and here's how we deal with, like, do you think we can, I don't know if we can do one sort of overall strategy today.
Yeah, well, I like to say that, you know, those who win have a plan. And I think that we're dealing with the same thing here, which is you have to have a plan. You have to have some general boundaries as the organization's boundaries have started to dissolve. And if you can start with a plan and you can, as you said, break these down into small bite-sized pieces, then IT can come out ahead.
So, I guess to do a quick introduction of yourself. So your Twitter handle is called Poglo. So what's Poglo?
So Paglo was an IT management SaaS company that Citrix acquired. And if we go back a few years, I think it's relevant for this discussion. There were really three core things that we saw happening in the marketplace. The first is what we've talked about already. There were more distributed devices, more applications coming online for IT folks to deal with. The second is that it became strategic to be cloud-based if you are going to manage and support people and devices, because you never knew where they were or what type of platform they would be running on. And then the third was IT folks continue to look for consolidation of tools. So you're seeing a consolidation in the marketplace of tools that allow you to provide remote support to be able to support your end users and the devices they are on, but also to be able to proactively have an early warning system, to be able to monitor that infrastructure to make sure nothing goes wrong. So you have an opportunity to get ahead of any problems. And it was really the amalgamation of those three insights that led us to found Paglo and ultimately set the stage for our vision for what IT management in the cloud meant.
And then Paglo was acquired by Citrix, and that sort of became a lot of the core technology that now makes up Citrix's go-to-manage product.
Yeah, you know, this was really a perfect combination. Citrix is number one worldwide in remote support by a long shot, and has provided, really pioneered the market of remote support 10 years ago, providing remote support for contact centers supporting external customers and remote support for IT professionals supporting people and machines internally. And what Paglo brought forward at the time was a proactive monitoring platform that was cloud-based. And as I mentioned, we're seeing consolidation in the market where IT professionals aren't necessarily looking for a single tool, but are looking for a platform now to support their people and machines.
And I guess it's interesting, my background is around SMS, or back when it was called SMS. And of course, that was a fine desktop management, desktop support product for desktop computers that were within the walls of your organization. And it basically had no concept for computers moving around. So what we found is that if we wanted to manage computers that were not in our office, they would VPN in. And I mean, that was the only way that we were able to sort of see them. So I guess as users move all around and have their laptops and they're connecting from all over the place, and who even knows if they use VPN connections really anymore, I guess it sort of becomes inevitable that the support of those users has to sort of evolve and become all over the place as well. It's not like I can have one database server and one software server, you know, sitting in my own data center anymore.
Exactly. And that was one of the core insights that we had 2007, 2008, is that, you know, the knowledge workforce was becoming more mobile. And it started really at the executive level, where if you look at surveys by folks like Accenture, you'd see people had multiple devices. They often worked in multiple locations, and they were becoming more difficult to support through traditional IT management tools. And that's what led us to the insight that if we followed what was happening in the front office of applications, CRM, and we looked in the back office, the ERP systems were moving cloud-based, it was clear that there was a massive opportunity to define the market for infrastructure management and support and make it cloud-based. And that's ultimately what led us to found Paglo.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because it never occurred to me that there was a gap in the middle. I mean, you talk about, so the front end stuff became cloud-based, and that sort of happened, you know, early-ish on, and the back office stuff became cloud-based, but what do you think it is? I mean, do you think it's IT pros in the middle that didn't sort of tie the management stuff to being cloud-based? I mean, is that something that, I don't know, I think IT folks are afraid of the cloud a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think there are the two points. There's the one that you made, which I think is right on, is in the past, core infrastructure was all in one location. So land-based technology for monitoring and support made tons of sense, and a lot of times it was built into what you already got. And the second was, you know, IT is the group responsible for setting policy and setting security across the organization. And we're going through a transformation. You're seeing it in the other areas of application, really driven, I think, on the CRM side, where it's becoming more acceptable to do things cloud-based. And in the end, I think there's becoming a realization that oftentimes cloud-based technologies, especially the ones that are mature and have been doing it for some time, actually have more sophisticated processes, more secure data centers, more talented people across the organization to be able to support these applications in the cloud. Ultimately, I would argue, delivering a more secure environment within the business.
Well, that's... To me, I'm 100% on board with that, because I'm a believer, and I've said on this show before, that I believe that, for example, Gmail is more reliable than internal email systems, even though Google doesn't provide sort of real or decent SLAs. But I figure, like, come on, they have like, you know, a billion employees and a billion computers. If it's broken,
yeah, they have more uptime than your organization does, probably.
Yeah, like, we can't do it better. Like how arrogant are we that we can do, you know, email more reliably, more security than Gmail? And frankly, we have our shitty ass small Exchange mailboxes.
And we can't.
Well, we can. Yeah. But and we have our small mailboxes anyway, so all of our users put their email in the cloud. Anyway, but I guess the same is true from this standpoint, is that, I mean, gosh, when I was doing these SMS consulting projects, and again, back in those days, I mean, this is, you know, 10 years ago, but it was all on-premise, you know? And I mean, you know, we did one for a government agency. It was a 9-month project and roll. It was insane. And it, like, just at the end of the day, to push up patches to computers and like have remote control for support, you know? And I guess the fact that if it's all cloud-based, then I guess, it's any SaaS benefit. You know, I'm not dealing with upgrades. I can probably be productive like close to day one. Like, really, all you have to do is get the agent installed on the end user machines and you're in. There's no, and I'm assuming that in this case, Citrix Online runs all the, like, there's Citrix Online servers that run all the go-to-manage backend and reporting, all that kind of stuff, right?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. We run data centers around the world.
Yeah.
Do you see any problems with, like, you know, enterprise buy-in? I mean, you know, because Windows Intune, you know, they announced that last year. And, I mean, the few people I've talked to about it are like, there's no effing way that I'm putting the management of my machines into the cloud. And so while people like Microsoft have finally come around and embraced this concept that you've been doing since, what, 2007, I think you said, there's still organizations that seem to be pushing back on that.
Yeah, I'd say that's fewer and fewer if you look at adoption of the major technology suites and those that are cloud-based. I mean, you just have to turn to the SAP acquisition over the weekend of SuccessFactors, right? This is a multi-billion dollar acquisition that I think puts a stamp, at least a recent stamp, on the migration to cloud that we're seeing. And let me phrase it differently. Let me tell you a little story. So one of my kids said something fascinating this weekend. He turned and he had his iPod Touch and he said to me, "Hey, Dad, you know, what came first, the iPhone or the computer?" So why is this so fascinating? It was fascinating to me because to him, compute is omnipresent. It is everywhere now. And I'd suggest that the generation after him will not even think about that question because compute will be all around them. And I would suggest if you take that argument further and you talk about the devices being omnipresent, I'd say end users don't care where the applications come from, right? They just don't care. What they care about is, does it deliver the functionality that they need when they need it, and can they get their job done? And I think this is why we're seeing this transformation. And like I said, we saw the original move from executives, more devices outside of the office. But I really think the sleeping giant here is the Generation Y, which is creeping up on us, which by 2015 will be 50% of the workforce.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know,
and that's consistent with our message.
Yeah,
that's what we keep thinking, you know, is that these young guys, like, they're not taking over yet, but they will be. And it only takes a few of them to enlighten the other people who maybe aren't sure what's going on as to the new devices, the new methods that they can get their own work done and all of that. I mean, I think it's definitely a trend that we're only now starting to see, but probably will take a few years before it really starts to make a huge, huge impact.
And that's what's crazy about that prediction, though, is that, I mean, it's 2015. That's like 3 years from now. This is not.
It sounds like it's so far away.
We're still in contract at that point. Like, Gabe and I are still working at Tech Target when that happens, you know? So that's really, I mean, that kind of sort of hits it, yeah, hits it close to home.
Hey, Brian, was it you and I last week, I think, that we're talking about SAP and how, like, their method of delivering via the cloud is to use VDI, or was that maybe in the Oracle?
That was Oracle, yeah. Yeah, we talked about
and
that.
And so, like, literally 6 days later, less than that, they buy a cloud app company.
Well, that's different.
That will help them deliver.
But that's SAP that bought this SuccessFactors, right? Which is SAP is separate from Oracle now, I think, right? Yeah, they're not the same. I know Oracle bought PeopleSoft. And
oh yeah, but still, the method of deploying SAP to the cloud was VDI.
Oh, I got you. Yeah,
there's not a cloud option, and now SAP buys a cloud option essentially. So I think that's a unique timing.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, I guess that gets into applications and form factors. And, you know, Brian, to your point, when you said people just don't care about the applications, I would almost say I would slightly disagree. And I say they almost now care that the application isn't tied to their device. Maybe that's like getting too much in the weeds. But it's like they don't care about applications. They so don't care that the only way they do care about it is, like, I don't want an old-fashioned application that's installed on my device. Like, I just expect that when I use or subscribe to an application, I'm going to access it from a mobile device and an iPad and a computer, and I just expect that I have the application on all the platforms.
Yeah, well, I think this is the useful part of the discussion about consumerization of IT, right? This is that I expect the application that I used at work to be as friendly and as easy to use as the ones that I use at home. And that, I think, is a really healthy discussion. I mean, I wish I was the first, but I wasn't, to say that software is eating the world. And it's absolutely true. And I'd say we've migrated, and I'd like to say it here first, we've migrated from a bring your device to work environment to a bring your app to work environment, right? The Generation Y will come to work with applications, and they've already seen this through surveys where they say, hey, look, 50% of us don't care what IT's policy is, and another 30% of us are incredibly dissatisfied with the communication and collaboration platforms, and we're using technologies and platforms like Facebook, Twitter, SMS. Why can't we use those at work?
So yeah, and I guess that as you say too, that's another one that we see the transition. Like the people who, well, first of all, bring your own app. I like that a lot. That's a good. You're right, because the device. I mean, because even the device, it's funny too, because you know I've had some very public sort of trials, let's say, between BlackBerry Droid and iOS recently. And that was my big determining factor, was like, do they have the apps on the platforms that I want to use? And because really the device itself, I mean, I could give a shit if I have an iPhone versus a whatever. Like, it has to meet the applications. Ironically, and BlackBerry did, because all I need is email and Twitter and, like, you know, Google Maps. And unfortunately, BlackBerry crashed every 10 minutes, so there was that problem. And as you said, why wouldn't that apply to IT people as well? So they're used to having like nice, fun interface for their word processing and their webbing and their Facebook and all that kind of stuff. So you think you're going into some Microsoft Management Console from 1997 to now manage your users? I guess it just does not apply anymore.
Right.
Hey, let's take a quick 60-second commercial break, and they'll come back, and I want to dig more into sort of some of the futures of GoToManage. Today's episode of Brian and Gabe Live is sponsored by Citrix GoToManage. GoToManage is a cloud-based IT services tool that combines best-in-class remote support with network monitoring and alerting capabilities, giving IT professionals like you total control of your IT world. With Citrix GoToManage, you can easily deliver live support to customers or access unattended computers and servers. You can monitor the performance of desktops, servers, and networks. You can stay on top of issues with proactive alerts. And now there's GoToManage Mobile, providing support right from your iPad. If you want to give GoToManage a try for yourself, just go to gotomanage.com, click on the free trial button, and enter the promo code Madden45. That's a special code for Brian and Gabe Live listeners, which makes your trial last 45 days. Desktop management, tech support, and monitoring has never been so easy. All right, well, thanks for sticking around. We're talking to Brian DeHaff from Citrix Online, and you were the co-founder and CEO of a company that you sold to Citrix and became a lot of the core functionality for Citrix's GoToManage product. Also, Jack Madden is joining us here in San Francisco, and Gabe Knuth is in Omaha. And Justin's here too, by the way. Hello, Justin.
How's it going?
I put him on the spot there. Today's show, incidentally, is sponsored by Citrix, and specifically their Citrix Online, you know, GoToManage group. And so, you know, as part of that, they you know, provided Brian to us. But when we're talking about what we talk about on the show, we said let's talk about the industry and kind of IT professionals and future of apps and that kind of stuff instead of getting into GoToManage too much. But while I have you here, though, I want to put you on the spot and ask you about GoToManage. And I don't know if this is something that I don't even know what you do at Citrix, frankly, so it's going to be your departments. But like, we're talking about all these different devices and the consumerization of IT and everything, and then how, you know, management as a service can allow these IT professionals to, you know, get their own consumerization, to have consumer-type applications. But does something like GoToManage evolve so that it can also manage all of these devices that are out there? Because now GoToManage is it's a Windows sort of desktop management product, but is there a future where it manages iPads, or is this a different thing?
Yeah. So I'm responsible for GoToManage, the product. And let's start with what is it? So GoToManage is a cloud-based IT support and management platform. It allows IT professionals within businesses, traditionally IT managers, or IT consultants who serve many, many small, medium businesses to provide support for users and to the devices that they have. And what does that really mean? It has two modules. It has a remote support module that allows an IT professional to remotely connect to a machine, even when the user isn't sitting there, and it allows the IT professional to support end users when they put up their hand and say, hey, you know, I can't get connected to the Wi-Fi network, or I can't print. And then it has a second module which provides...
Well, if they can't get connected to the Wi-Fi network, how are you supporting them?
Well, they might be connected to the LAN. And it has a second module, which is a monitoring module, which allows them to proactively monitor, think of it as an early warning system, all of the devices in the infrastructure. So not just the Windows devices, allows them to monitor the computers, whether they're Macs or Windows, server infrastructure. It allows them to monitor the network switches and routers through SNMP and just about anything else through SSH. It securely gathers, there's a small piece of software called the GoToManage crawler that runs on the local network. It communicates with the infrastructure. It gathers the data. It securely transports the performance and health information back into the cloud, into our data centers where each customer has a secure account. The customer logs into their account and is able to visualize what was formerly invisible, really what's happening in the environment. And that's what GoToManage does today. Now, your question about the future, absolutely. You know, we see IT as a dynamic place. We cover a large swatch of devices today, and that continues to grow. We recently rolled out the GoToManage for iPad that allows IT professionals to provide remote support, connect to unattended machines from their iPad, and you should expect that we will continue to aggressively roll out functionality for both providing support from mobile devices and supporting mobile devices, so being able to connect and gather diagnostic information from various devices.
I guess that's something, too, that kind of fits into Citrix's strategy in the bigger picture, because, I mean, I know Citrix as a company is, you know, a lot of us are moving away from device management, so to speak, and I think that's something that's probably companies like Citrix, and frankly, a lot of the other people who are doing desktop virtualization, I mean, like VMware, same thing, where they never really were in the device management game per se. They've all about, you know, delivering apps and that kind of thing. And so I guess you can sort of see that there could be a future of these kinds of things coming together where GoToManage today is about managing the devices that the users have. But as we move forward, we sort of switch away from managing the actual devices to managing the apps and the security and all the sort of the user experience on the devices.
Yeah, I think this is there's a rich ground here. You have to start with the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are often difficult challenges to solve, which is how do I efficiently collect data across all of my devices in my infrastructure? How do I gather it? How do I allow people to provide proactive notification off of it? How do I allow them to visualize what's happening in the environment? There's lots of rich opportunities to grow from there.
So as IT professionals are, I guess, you know, going through their lives and figuring out, you know, how much they come to accept this kind of thing. You know, we were talking before about user acceptance. Does GoToManage end up being used mostly? You mentioned consultants, you know, SMB kind of things. Like, is there? I guess IT is a service. I mean, even IT departments using these kinds of services. There's, I guess, an aspect of that in large enterprise as well.
Sure. I mean, remember where we're starting from. So 10 years ago, we pioneered the remote support market. So we've got tens and tens of thousands of IT professionals using GoToManage and GoToAssist, our remote support tool for the contact center. And they're using it in a myriad of ways, but it really comes down to two core use cases. It's supporting people who are using technology and supporting the devices that are running both on their desktop and in the server room.
You guys should come out with like a GoToAssist family edition that is for kids who've moved away from home but still have their parents they have to support. Maybe throw one in every time a Citrix, you know, for every...
We have that. We call that GoToManage for iPad. You actually can go to GoToManage.com and sign up for a free mobile plan. After you do that, go to the App Store and download the GoToManage iPad app, and you can deliver unlimited live support to your family and friends at no cost.
Whoa, I didn't realize that. And that's the users on the other end, Mac, Windows, no problem.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But it has to be from an iPad?
For the free application, correct, yes.
Okay.
That's just more justification for everyone to have iPads.
Exactly.
So Jack, you know, those listening, you know that Jack and I are brothers. I believe that means if I get you an iPad for Christmas, then I never have to talk to mom again.
That's a trade-off that iPad versus being the support tech. That's a trade-off that I'll have to think about for a while.
Yeah, and it goes, you know, like this is something that the more often I go home, I mean, it's fine. Like, you know, I miss my family and everything. But after I go home for a day or two, you know, after like going back to my old house for a few days, I think after a few days I'll be like, $4.99, and I'm out of here forever. So, moving on. So it's 30 minutes past the hour here. I think there's a couple other topics I want to sort of talk about today. But, you know, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to Citrix GoToManage for sponsoring this.
Yeah.
But Brian, you know, please join us. You're welcome to stay as we just kind of chat about other sort of random things that are on our minds.
So, okay. Well, so, it's been so much fun. I think I'll stick around.
And I know that you got up super, super early to come up here. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
So Gabe, what's on your mind for today?
I think it's all consumerization stuff that's on my mind. You know, we've had our Amazon Kindles for how many weeks now? 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
So we've been holding off talking about what we think of it to each other for some sort of, you know, video or audio, that kind of a thing. I don't think we're going to get around to the video. So what are your thoughts on it?
So let's do our audio Kindle Fire review.
Because looking at it, you know, everybody, Google image search Kindle Fire. All right.
Okay, that's what we're talking about. Yeah, so what we've got, it's what, like a 7-inch tablet? It looks like a small iPad. It's size-wise, it's in between an iPhone and an iPad. So what they did well, I like that when I bought it from Amazon, it was already hooked into my Amazon account. So I didn't have to activate or sign in. Like, I just opened it up and turned it on. Maybe I had to type in my password. But it knew it was already registered for me. All of my, you know, my books, everything that I had ever bought from Amazon in the past was there. So there was a period during my non-iPhone days when I was buying all my music from Amazon. Although now that you know, iTunes has iTunes Match, you can get unencrypted versions of songs to put on your Androids or whatever. But all the songs I had, the books, the instruction manuals to every product I ever bought in my life, those were all there, ready to go on the Kindle. So I thought that was really cool. Other than that, it's weird because it runs Android, but it's like Amazon Android, and it uses.
Well, that was my question to you, right? Because I've been iOS now for, I don't know, 2 years. I guess I just renewed the 4S, and my first one was a 3GS, so it's a 2.5 years maybe. And I too love the fact that it was integrated already with my Amazon, you know, Prime account and all of that. But I've never used anything Android before, and to me, it just seems a little rough around the edges. And I almost want to say slow, but I don't know what the hell it should look like or feel like already.
I think it's super slow. But the thing is, so first of all, this is a weird Android that, like, Amazon. I mean, I guess all versions of Android have been customized, you know, somewhat by the vendor and everything. But I mean, this is definitely, this doesn't have the normal Android. Like, I had been using Android for a year or two, and I couldn't really figure out how to do everything I wanted to do inside this inside the Kindle Fire. And it's weird too, because, like, going back to what you were saying, Brian, about the apps. I mean, I've been using Android on phones for like a year and a half, and I thought all the apps I bought for my phone would just exist for my Kindle Fire. But I guess the phone hooks into, like, Google's Android marketplace, maybe, and this one.
Are you entitled to them at least?
I couldn't figure it out. Even the New York Times. So I pay for New York Times. Like, I'm a paid subscriber, and you can have it on all your digital devices. And I touch the button to launch New York Times, and it says, like, you know, for subscribers, whatever. And I touch that button, but it used my Amazon account to buy a New York Times subscription for me. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm paying like $35 a month for this thing, and now I've paid an extra, you know, $14.99 to have it on my Kindle. So I haven't still actually worked that out to figure out how exactly I, you know, hook those together. But it's the same thing. So, like, I bought Angry Birds for iPad and iOS, and I bought Angry Birds for Android on my phone. But do I have to buy? But I never bought Angry Birds, like, from the Amazon store. So I don't know how to make the Angry Birds I bought in the past put, you know, I don't know how to get them onto my Kindle.
I mean, I understand if you have to rebuy it for a new platform. You know, if we're talking iOS to Android, I understand, you know, it's a different development. And so, you know, I would expect to have to pay for it again, but not.
But, you know, no, Android, that's bullshit. You expect to, because you're 32 years old. But everyone, you know, probably like younger than 25 or younger than 30, I don't know. Like, that's bullshit. I don't care what freaking platform I have. Like, I shouldn't have to buy. Like, I want to buy Angry Birds. And, like, every device I have ought to be able to run Angry Birds if I buy Angry Birds.
Oh, yeah, but you don't think Angry Birds was developed by 30-year-old people, too? So, you know, that I'm just saying the mentality that they're selling that thing, I agree with you that in the future that's what people are going to care about, okay? But right now, like, I can understand the fact that it was two different teams developing the app for two different platforms. If you're going to charge me twice, I'm okay, more okay with getting charged once for each platform than I am for getting charged for the same platform, just a different device.
Well, so how does that compare to charging for, like, on Mac OS to have all these applications you bought before the days of the Mac App Store, and then now they have the Mac App Store, and you have to rebuy the app to get it from the App Store version of it?
I just don't use the App Store version of it.
How long will you have that choice, though? Because you think the developers are not going to be running forever with, like, two separate versions, you know, one package for the App Store and one package separately.
Yeah, I don't care. It doesn't affect me that much.
So the thing with the Kindle Fire, I mean, it's small, like physically small. So I always feel like I can't read my iPad on the bus or the subway because I just feel like too much of a douchebag. And even though everyone has iPads now, I just feel like an asshole when I'm like have it on the bus, you know. But the Kindle Fire is small enough that I feel more, because I mean, I'll read on my phone, but the phone is super annoying to read because you turn the page like every 15 seconds. But so the Kindle Fire, I do like that it's big and like it's big enough to read normally, but it's small enough that it doesn't make me look like a total asshole. So that's a good plus for it. Plus, I don't feel like I'm gonna get mugged because no one knows what the hell it is. So that's
and you don't care because it was $200.
Yeah,
and frankly, that $200 price point's a big deal. I mean, a lot of people have been asking. You know, like in I see Tim posted best new company name. My wife said I would fix your PC.com. Mine would be my wife said I will answer all your Christmas computer and device questions.com. And so I have people calling saying, hey, should I get an iPad? Should I get this? You know, what about these $79 Android tablets? And I'm like, whoa. First off, those are not anywhere near. Just don't. If it costs less than $200, you don't want it. I've actually recommended a Kindle Fire for a couple of people that actually would prefer to, you know, watch movies, read books, than have a portable music player. And they still want, like, the portable, like, you know, walk around the house, surfing the internet kind of thing. And so it's a limited use case maybe. But, I mean, for $200, it's not that bad. I mean, it's a little slow and a little bit clunky. But I would imagine a lot of that can be fixed with software. And the slowness is just what you get for a $200 tablet.
Although it's not – I don't believe it. I mean, I think the value is – it's a loss leader for them, I believe. Or maybe not loss leader is not the right word. But it's – I don't think it costs – I think it costs more. I don't know what the iSupply data is, but I think it costs more than $200.
Oh, I've definitely seen that somewhere, but I don't remember where.
Yeah, I forgot to look it up, but let's find it. But Kindle Fire costs $201.70 to manufacture. They're losing $1.75 each.
Wow. The other question I asked about the Kindle Fire is about the Fire versus the Nook, which, because Barnes & Noble now has an Android-based, like, real, you know, color sort of e-reader tablet. And in this sense, To me, my sense is if you're going to go in that market, you go with Amazon because Amazon already does where it's very close to owning the world. So, you know, you don't want to be like that guy who bought the Neo Geo or whatever and you just like missed out on like, hey, technically it's better, but,
That's right, Betamax.
Yeah, so the reason we bought the Amazon Kindle, well, I don't know. Maybe you had no justification, like mentally worked out. It's just like we bought it because we could. In my mind, I was really interested in the web browsing, the way the web worked, right? Because like it has that, everything's proxied through Amazon, and they call it like a split browser where a lot of the stuff, it'll literally like re-render the pages and everything to fit on that screen. And I don't know if I just never used it enough over 3G. It doesn't have 3G connection built in, but I've got my MiFi. Although I guess that's 4G now, but I mean it's. I didn't notice a bit of difference. So, you know.
No, and I think that's the important part. I think, you know, they're like the referees in a football game. Like, you know, they're doing their job if you don't notice they're there.
Yeah.
Well, you mean you didn't notice a bit of difference from your iPad?
Yeah, from the iPad. Yeah.
Well, so you just have to know that all that processing isn't taking place on the device, unlike on the iPad.
Yeah,
and which allows you to have a slower device.
Right, and slower, yeah, and we'll see. Because the thing is, I don't carry the Kindle with me, though, on a regular basis, because now for me, the Kindle and the iPad are sort of duplicates. So I don't think you need, it's not like we're adding a fourth. Yeah, it's super, super heavy. And it's funny, though, they only have one button on it. So I feel like that was their, because they're, you know, the iPad has three buttons or whatever, or four or five buttons. So it's like, screw you, Apple, we only have one button. And I'll tell you what, one button is goddamn annoying, because when you want to change the volume on that thing, you're like menu, 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 volume. And you want to change the brightness on it. It's like there's no, the one button they have is the off button. So you can't like.
How you change your brightness. It's either bright or not.
So in terms of actually using it, it's just, I don't know. And there's no like.
Clunky.
Yeah, and there's no Citrix client for it. Maybe that's coming out, but there's no Citrix receiver for it, even though there's a receiver for Android. At least I couldn't find it. Whatever the hell App Store connects to.
There wasn't a Pocket Cloud either. There actually wasn't. I couldn't find any RDP client. Actually, Ericom was there, but I couldn't find anything other than Ericom for a while. Finally, Wise Pocket Cloud is there, but it's, you know, it's fine. But again, since stuff is buried in different menus and the operating system looks different, it looks so similar, right, to an untrained eye. But man, when you actually go to use a thing, it's just a little bit different. You know, there's actually the concept of menu still, and with iOS, everything's just kind of like right in front of you. So I think some of my problems with it is just that I've been iOS for so long, but I don't know. There's some refinements I think that could be made. And I don't know if that's Amazon's version of Android's problem or if that's an Android thing across the board. And you mentioned like what our reasons for buying it were. My reason for buying it was I don't have anything Android and everybody's doing stuff for Android as well. And it was $200.
But don't judge Android based on this Kindle Fire.
All right. All right.
Hey, let's take another break, Gabe. But to finalize the Kindle Fire, what's your one-word summary of the Kindle Fire experience?
Good, not great.
All right. Yeah, that's fine. I was going to say, meh. All right. Back in 60 seconds.
Today's episode of Brian and Gabe Live is sponsored by Citrix GoToManage. GoToManage is a cloud-based IT services tool that combines best-in-class remote support with network monitoring and alerting capabilities, giving IT professionals like you total control of your IT world. With Citrix GoToManage, you can easily deliver live support to customers or access unattended computers and servers. You can monitor the performance of desktops, servers, and networks. You can stay on top of issues with proactive alerts. And now there's GoToManage Mobile, providing support right from your iPad. If you want to give GoToManage a try for yourself, just go to GoToManage.com, click on the free trial button, and enter the promo code Madden45. That's a special code for Brian and Gabe Live listeners, which makes your trial last 45 days. Desktop management, tech support, and monitoring has never been so easy.
Well, thank you for sticking around with us on Brian and Gabe Live. I'm Brian Madden in San Francisco, joined with Jack Madden and Citrix Online's Brian DeHoff. And Gabe is with us from Omaha. I forgot where you lived for a second there. Did you get my present I sent to you, by the way?
No, you sent a present?
Yeah. Oh, you don't check your mail, do you? It came in the mail.
Oh, you sent it to the post office?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'll go. Because I have some other stuff in there, too. So.
Well, yeah, you guys are the rural, like, 1% or whatever that's causing them to lose all the money, right? Because they still deliver mail to you in 24 hours, which then you check your mailbox down the street, like, once a month.
Did you just call me rural?
Isn't it?
No.
They don't even deliver the mail to your house. Like, there's, like, a box at the end of the street. That's how far away you live.
No, that's suburban, man. That's all it is. Every development made in the 2000s. Has this community mailbox instead of a mailbox at each house.
Yeah, because so, if your letter carrier had to actually walk between houses, they'd only be able to deliver like four houses per.
Stamps would now be right. $3.
Oh my gosh.
Think of how much money they'd save on gas.
All right, well, there's a present for you in your mailbox.
Sweet.
It's so funny. So I said, you know, what we want to talk about next, I incorrectly earlier referred to as Canaveral IQ. And Canaveral IQ was the subject of the first blog post that I ever wrote for BrianMadden.com in May of 2003. It was about Tarantella buying New Moon. New Moon had the Canaveral IQ product, and the DNA of Oracle's current secure global desktop product is actually based on the Canaveral IQ product. So that was a fun sort of blast from the past. But what I really wanted to talk about was Carrier IQ. And, you know, these folks have been in the news recently as you know, having software on your devices. It, like, spies on your phone and it captures keystrokes and, you know, text message contents. And And actually, Colin Steele, who's a writer for TechTarget, he writes for our search consumerization site. He wrote a piece on our consumerization blog site, which is called Consumerize IT. He wrote a piece yesterday looking at this carrier IQ thing from the context of consumerization, where he's just kind of saying, like, hey, this is just one more thing for IT pros to worry about when they embrace consumerization or when users bring in their own devices, is if it's untrusted devices, untrusted networks, and we're saying users can do whatever they want, you know, even if they have VPNs or secure executing aspects on the device, if this thing is essentially, I don't want to call it a rootkit, but I mean, if it's looking at every keystroke and every text message and every bit of data that goes in and out, that's just one more thing for IT people to have to worry about. The reason I'm mentioning this is yesterday, Jack and I went down to the offices of Good Technologies, so the people that make like GoodLink and Good Mobile Messenger, all the new mobile device management software. So Good's CTO, he's new to Good. He's only been there about 4 months, and previously he was a chief security architect for Juniper. But this dude is all about security. And Nico Van Summeren, I want to say, something like that.
Yeah.
Nico. Anyway, he's all about security, ponytail, everything. So he's just, he was really, really great. And we were talking about, you know, just the architecture of Good's products and everything. And I think that that'll be something that we, you know, talk about more in the future. And definitely there'll be an article coming out about what Good is doing. But I asked him about Carrier IQ. And I said, well, so what is this? Is this just a bunch of, you know, hubbub that's all bullshit? And he said, yeah, pretty much. Like, the only thing he had negative to say about, pardon me, he said, you know, Carrier IQ's implementation, they made some kind of dumb mistakes in their implementation, not in what they do, but in sort of...
In that they got caught.
Yeah. And also, and their reaction has been really bad also. And because he kind of said, like, you know, when you have senators writing you letters asking you to answer questions for them, you're not having a good day. And even those whole things. So basically what he said, I mean, Carrier IQ, it's software that's sort of the phone carriers, like Verizon, all them put it into the phones when you get the phone from them. And it just does like network performance monitoring of the network, and it does different things. It allows like diagnostics. So he said, like, for example, you know, sometimes you call, like, you're getting dropped calls or messages aren't going through, and you'll be on the phone with a certain with the help from Verizon or whatever, and then they're going to tell you, hey, so enter this special code into your phone, and they'll like send us some diagnostic information. So that's what Carrier IQ is doing. So he said when it's looking at keystrokes, it's not recording everything. So the problem is just because the keystrokes are sent to the software doesn't actually mean it's like recording them. And so he said, same with text messages. So phone carriers send tons and tons of text messages, control messages back and forth. Like, you know, Exchange Active Sync has been doing this for, you know, 10 years, where it's sending notification messages on the back end that the phone is sort of hiding from the user. And that's the same thing. So Carrier IQ, all the text messages that come through is looking to see if it has its, you know, diagnostics instructions in it. And if not, then it just ignores it and passes it right through to the phone. So technically,
it's looking at all your text messages, much like you are, or much like the OS is looking at them to display them on the screen. Like, it's just, it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of, so that's what Nico was saying, is that, you know, the OS does this stuff anyway. Like, the only, if this thing wasn't a separate process with a different company name, no one would care at all. Like, if Android was doing this, or if it wasn't even a separate process, it was more like built in the OS, it would be nothing. But just the fact that someone found that this process could view all your key commands, and that he said even for key commands, it's only the number pad, because it's just, I mean, it doesn't even, like, they don't want to, you know, scan through all everything. It's just numbers that you type in. It's looking at as they go through. And, you know, we were kind of joking, like, there could be like an Onion article about this where it's oh my God, there's a software on my phone. It scans everything I do. It's called the OS. The OS, yeah. And there's this. So it's just one of these things where this is just not a big deal at all.
So where I took this when I read this article, I never thought that Carrier IQ was evil. But what I wonder though is, you know, if there's somebody that can take advantage of that information. You know, I guess there's somebody. It doesn't matter if it's Carrier IQ, if it's Apple, or if it's Google, or whatever. But if somebody could actually take that information and then use it for evil outside of Carrier IQ's, you know, oversight. But again, that can happen to anybody anywhere. So it's not, you know, it's just not a familiar name.
Yeah, I mean, it's
so
a process, right? So like if someone can break into the OS and like break into the memory that some, you know, OS level process is taking.
Well, but it's already outside
taking.
The OS. So you can
but
put
what's
all the
OS, though? It's all
the OS.
Yeah, but I mean, the OS provides a framework that allows things to run with certain, you know, permissions and certain levels and everything. So like the OS is, you know, a million little files. So what's one more? So what if it's got a different vendor stamp on it?
Oh, I'm saying, though, if that information is sent to them and somebody can actually take that information, since it's already outside of the OS, somebody else can maybe get access to it in a different way. So it's another vector for somebody to get in there and get it out.
Vector. That's good but, security talk.
Yeah, I know. And I meant that. so that was where I took this thought. I didn't, you know, it's not the carrier IQ is bad. I looked at this much the same way as the article that came out maybe last year that talked about how your iPhone was tracking you everywhere you go and how, you know, how it keeps track of all the different towers that you've associated with, and that data is saved so that you can and you can see a map with all of the everywhere you've been, basically. And, you know, all the tinfoil hat people freaked out about that. I actually thought it was kind of cool. And in much the same way that I think this is kind of cool. I mean, I went out and got the map, and I'm like, wow, you can see me driving to Ohio and back. And so I think that this is kind of neat that it's there, that it can do this, and that we're taking advantage of the technology to ensure the experience is great. But that's the only thing is I worry about somebody who doesn't have the right, you know, intent to get into it. So the company itself, I think, is fine.
Well, except for the fact that, you know, senators are asking them questions. So they were fine, but because of this, they are now not fine. But it could have been more of their architecture and how they actually handled it.
By fine, I mean not evil.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that. So we've got a couple things. I mean, you know, we're coming up on the end of the year here. I think, Gabe, we should definitely do a year-end wrap-up show. And so maybe we can do that in a few weeks, and then we'll do a predictions show as well. So I think the first show that we do in January, we'll make that our predictions, and that'll be a good one to have people calling into, and you know, seeing what we think is going to happen for this upcoming year. But let's talk.
Yeah, if we can publish that a little bit earlier. Maybe it's a 2-hour show if we can get enough people on board to call in and.
I mean, as long
that might be a lot of fun.
As long as people keep on listening, you know, we can do there's no time limits here, right? So, so as far as what's happening next in December, let's talk about a few things. So, Jack, you've got an article today on consumerizeit.com. I don't know if you have the link. I'll grab the link for that real quick. But, Jack, why don't you tell us about what you're doing?
Okay, well, this is relating to I don't even know what to call this field yet. It's not mobile device management, because mobile device management has been around forever. So BYOD plus MDM equals mobile personality management or something. Basically, what this comes back to is, you know, back at VMworld in August, we were excited about about Horizon Mobile and the opportunity for split personalities, and you keep everything separate. Except then, when they made announcements a few months later at the next VMworld, that it turns out it's only like 3 different devices that it supports, and that's certainly not BYOD. And also the hypervisor involves a rootkit, and so what person wants to bring in their phone and their personal phone and let their corporate IT put a rootkit on it? So that brought up a whole bunch of questions. And you know, just in the meantime, so many other emails came across my inbox about solutions that offer separation between personal and private. And some of them are profiles, some of them are applications, some of them are hypervisors, and they all make the same set of crazy claims about everything being completely secure and separated. And there are just so many of these out there, and we don't know what they all do and how they all work yet. So I was thinking it was time to take a big look at sort of the whole field of this split personality mobile device management area. So I'm working out a list of vendors to look through. Obviously, Horizon. Yesterday, Brian, you and I were down at Good Technologies learning about their solution. So my question right now is sort of to the community: What other solutions should I be looking at, and what questions should we really be asking? And a lot of the questions will be around, can this really be truly bring your own device, or is it more intrusive than a consumer would like to be having put on their own device? And
it's interesting because we talked yesterday about, you know, you mentioned this is not really mobile device management anymore because that's been around forever. And actually, going back to the guy Nico, he was talking about that, you know, mobile device management, like, no one wants to manage devices. And that's kind of getting back to what we talked about earlier with you, Brian. I mean, like, we want to manage the applications, we want to manage the data, we want to sort of manage, like, what users can do on these devices. But this whole concept of mobile device management.
Yeah, screw the device.
Yeah, you start a BYO program, and suddenly you're managing, like, a million and one crazy things from the field that you're, you know, like Claudio said, BYO whatever turns into, like, IT managing a bunch of random different POSs.
But you might not want to, but you're going to be required to moving forward, right? Because that's the applications that your end users are taking advantage of to get their work done. So whether you like it or not, it's coming.
Right. But
well, so if we can only be managing the data and an application that we're putting out instead of a whole device, then that'll make things a lot easier. And I think that was Nico's point yesterday. And that's what I hope to find out from this. I mean, I guess I'm going to be calling it a mobile personality management smackdown. So there's an article on Consumerize IT today. So bring your suggestions for vendors and solutions to check out. And again, I'm not talking like the traditional mobile device management. I'm talking more like split personality, accommodating BYOD things, and like what nitty-gritty questions to get in there and really ask. So suggestions, comment on that article. You know, it'd really be great. And Gabe will be sitting in on some of these calls too over the next couple of weeks. I'll be talking to a bunch of vendors. So it should be interesting to see what I can really distill from this field.
And I
guess this is an impressive picture on the website, by the way, in your article on Consumerize IT. It's a photo of Jack sitting on a desk or sitting at a desk in front of at least a half dozen. It looks like maybe seven or eight different mobile devices. Are those all of ours, just our team, or did we have to borrow some from other people?
I borrowed a few from you know, coworkers sitting right next to me.
Okay.
Although
still, iPhones, Androids, Kindle Fire, iPad. There's a couple of Blackberries. I think those aren't ours.
Yeah, the Blackberries are borrowed from coworkers.
Oh no, Jack has a Blackberry.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh. It's his time. He's Jack's new, so he's in his like hazing period. So he's using a BlackBerry for 6 months before he can get a real phone.
He gets my 2007 Palm Trio.
I don't surf with it.
because
you can't.
Yeah, because it doesn't have Wi-Fi. We were in Safeway there at night, and I'm like, oh, check this out. He's like, yeah, my phone, it doesn't have Wi-Fi. I'm like, oh, right. Well, good. When March comes, though, Jack, you'll be on top of stuff. So that's going on. You know, that'll be a good Brainform session, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so you mentioned for the rest of December and January, I should mention that next week I'm going to be heading out to the wilds of Omaha to do sort of a mini geek week with just Gabe and I. We're going to, you know, it's sort of, I guess it's pretty much for my benefit to get some hands-on experience. We're going to stand up a few environments, a Vue environment and a Zen desktop environment. And then Gabe said, yeah. And then our last morning when we have an hour left, we'll do VDI in a box.
Well, oh, yeah, we only need an hour.
and because we haven't, you know, I mean, Vue 5 is out, Citrix Zen Desktop 5.5, I think SP1 is out. You know, we haven't put our hands on this in a little while, so that'll be cool. So
yeah,
so
it's not going to be Geek Week style stuff. It's just going to be a real quick kind of breeze through it, see what's changed, that kind of a thing. And Jack, I'm going to prove it to you. You can look out my back door and you can see downtown Omaha, and you look out my front door and you see cornfields. So I'm not rural, I'm urban, but I'm on the border.
Which direction do you have to walk to get your mail?
Cornfields are rural.
South.
Justin just said urban. Cornfields are rural.
So that's going on. I'm actually leaving. I'm running out of here as soon as we're done. I'm heading down to the airport. I'm flying to Austin to meet with a bunch of state, Texas state level CIOs and talk about why desktop virtualization has failed and why everything they're doing is stuck in pilot. Not calling out anyone in specific, but I mean the fact that, you know, there's a lot of hype around VDI and desktop virtualization in general, and yet a lot of us are still kicking the tires. So, you know, like, what the fuck? So that's the purpose of my talk tomorrow. Then tomorrow night, I'm hopping on an airplane flying to Los Angeles. On Thursday during the day, we've got the final one of the year, Desktop Virtualization 2011, our one-day seminar. It's in Los Angeles. If you go to brianmedden.com and click on events, you can find information for that if you are in the LA area. And then come home. Then next week, Jack, while you and Gabe are together, I'll be on the East Coast. I'll be doing some meetings in New York City and enjoying my birthday in New York City without talking to anyone, hopefully, about desktop virtualization on that day. And then I'm down to Washington, D.C., where we're doing the first consumerization of IT show. So I'm giving a presentation on that. It's a presentation based on what I gave at Briform a few years ago, or last year, this year. But that's in Washington, D.C. on Thursday. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, it's a week from Thursday, 9 days from today. I'll be giving that show, and that show is also free.
And maybe we should mention, coming up for January will be more in the Geek Week vein, the day that we'll spend setting up an Oracle VDI environment.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they finally talked us into doing it, and so we'll give it kind of the Geek Week treatment. They're going to come out for a day somewhere in that third week, and we'll go through the setup and all of that, and you know we'll bring out our WAN emulator and throw it through that too, just to see how it goes. I don't know that we'll get as thorough with it as we did with Geek Week, or if we'll try to, I guess we'll try to replicate the test we did a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a spot on replication of Geek Week. I think we're just going to try to get some exposure to it that we haven't had for what ever.
And you know, so. January is exciting. Gabe and I are actually going down to Houston to visit HP, where Tom Flynn, if you know him, he's sort of has a big role in their Thin Client group. He found us at Briform last year and said, I got a project to show you. You're going to flip out. It's amazing. I need like 6 months. Come on down. So he called us last week and said, hey, I'm ready to show you something. I said, can we bring the cameras? He said, yes. So we'll be down there in January to find out what the hell he's got going on down there. So with that.
Next Tuesday, we got Brandon Schell coming in. So I we didn't mention that, I don't think. I think we talked about it pre-show, but not on the air. So next Tuesday is Brandon Schell, who, he's our PowerShell guru from Briform and up until recently was an independent consultant, but now he works for Splunk. And man, that company gets a lot of buzz. So I can't wait to get him on and talk about what the hell Splunk is all about.
But I also can't wait to, he's another one of these guys who's really technical and really opinionated. So he fits in very well with us. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Next week's show, he will be in the studio. I will be in New York City, but I'll call in for the show. Gabe will be in Omaha. Jack will actually be up in the air at that time. So it'll be just Brandon and Justin, I guess, here in the studio. So we'll hopefully see you all back at this time with that show next Tuesday from San Francisco. This is Brian Madden with Jack Madden and Brian DeHoff and Gabe from Omaha. All of you for listening, thank you so much.